Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 163, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, season 3, episodes 13, The Seppo, and 14, Bad Girls. My name is Selena, and I sold my soul to keep talking about Buffy on this Rewatchable because it keeps being episodes I like, and I keep getting them. I even have Karen here, so it's like magic. Hello, Karen, you're back.
It's not magic, it's allergies.
Well... every little helps, you know.
Yes.
So you are back, and we also have two newbies here. We have Mitch and Kristen. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Howdy.
I am so excited to get started. So I'm just going to run through this contact information really quickly because, oh my gosh. If obviously Rewatchable is a part of hyperbole.com, which is hyperbole.com. You can find other podcasts there and you can leave us feedback about Buffy as long as it's spoiler free, of course. And this podcast, you can also do that via email, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, on Twitter, re_watchable, and on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And please do get in touch with us because we know you guys have a lot of thoughts, spoiler-free thoughts about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Before we start talking about the Seppo, we have some fun facts to let you guys get used to our voices. And I think, speaking of voices, let's have Karen go first and let's have her share some deets about why exactly she has been AWOL.
Well, I'm traveling right now for the next 3 weeks. I'm away from home and away from Kristen, my roomie, which is sad. But I'm having a good time. I was in New York. I slept with the windows open. Terrible idea. All the gunk from the city just settled into the back of my throat. So that's why I sound like this. I apologize if it's annoying during the recording. But I wanted to share my actual fun fact, which was... that I just saw X-Men Apocalypse, and unpopular opinion, really loved it. So,
I'm so
Kristen and I have
so
to talk
Marilla.
About that.
I'm about to see that tonight, and now you're giving me faith that I'm going to enjoy it all.
It was really fun.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Jennifer Lawrence?
I liked it, too. Yeah, it's good fun. It's a really, really fun movie, so.
I can't wait. Oh, you saw it, too? You saw it with her?
Yeah, I did the review.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Posted on Hypeable. Yeah, but I reviewed it on Friday. So, yeah, it's really fun.
Did you cry? Because I cried.
I cried a little.
Oh, I'm going to cry. I'm in a crying mood right now.
Aw.
What is your fun fact, Mitch?
Well, I already told everyone that I was moving to Seattle last time, and I think that that's really just all that's going on in my life. So, let's just say, like, I would highly suggest here. It's not, like, a fun fact. This is, like, a recommendation. I would highly suggest anyone that needs, like, temporary housing to do Airbnb, because I'm staying at someone's house for $900 for a full month, and to just get that really, like, quickly and, like, efficiently and legally, it was really cool. So I'm really happy with that, because my two cats are coming along with me. I'm just gonna
Aww,
shack
yay.
Up in this mom's, like, house for a full month, and it's such a cool little system. I always use it instead of hotels, because it's so much less expensive. You have the experience of getting to stay with someone, kind of like... I don't know, a hostel, I guess. Not like the horror movie, but, you know, like, you know, I think, Selena, you're probably more familiar because I think it's a more common term in Europe that hostels aren't as scary. To Americans, I think that most people...
No, they're fine.
Most people tend to think of the movie whenever I say a hostel, so I try not to reference that.
Yeah, but we also don't have scary horror stories about public buses and stuff, so I think in general it's just a different scenario. But that's cool. And what about you, Kristen?
Let's see. My fun fact is that I had to go and buy a book of stamps the other day. And rather than just spending, rather than spending the $9.50 on the blah, boring book of stamps, I got Batman ones and they're awesome. And yeah, I'm very, very excited to put Batman stamps on things. So now I'm like, I need to find things to mail. Like, so yeah, Batman stamps are awesome.
That's cool. That's really cool. It's the little things in life, you know, it's the little pleasures.
Exactly. Turn mundane things like stamps into awesome highlights. That's, yeah.
Exactly. I am, fun fact, I'm the worst at fun facts. I don't have any. I just really want to start talking about Buffy, the, you know, Xander and all of that, but I guess the closest thing I could give you to a fun fact that's semi-related to this episode is that we once had a dog named Zippo. So that's almost Zeppo. So there you go. So fun.
You know what's funny?
What kind of dog was it?
The Labrador.
I don't know what it is about this episode. As we're getting into it, this is probably a good transition. I don't remember them saying anything about the word Zeppo in the entire episode. Is that like a phrase I should know? Like, what's a Zeppo? Is that a
Cordelia
word? Cordy scolds Xander for not knowing what a Zeppo is.
What is it?
Maybe so you are literally.
So I'm literally Xander right now. I still don't know what it is.
Well, it's I think the one they're referring to is the Marx brother, like the youngest Marx brother who like nobody knew or cared about, really, wasn't it? Don't you think?
Weird.
That's because it's like Harpo, I forget the middle Marx brother, and then Zeppo is the youngest one. And he's the one that nobody ever pays attention to. Yeah.
He's like the last one. The last
one. Like, we're talking like the communist Marx. Like, I'm there with you guys.
No, like Harpo Marx, the actor, comedic actor, silent movies.
The other Marx.
Not Karl Marx.
I was like, Karl Marx had a brother, and we're talking about Harpo, it, like, just casual, whatever.
Yeah, no. No, not those, no.
Right. It's basically, like, today we would say, you know, you're the third Hemsworth. You know, that's like the day equivalent of that.
I think. Lost Hemsworth, yeah.
Yeah, right. What's his face? Like, Chris Scott? What is his name? I don't know.
Yeah.
There proves my point. You know, it's the third Hemsworth brother. It's the fifth Marx brother. That's
Elizabeth Olsen escaped that because she's now more in the scene.
Yeah,
because like the twins don't even act, but she's all up in that Captain America business.
Yeah, there you go. I'm glad that we just updated that reference for the show. You know, I feel like I did a good deed now. But yeah, so the Zeppo, that's the first episode of the two we're talking about today. I have been waiting for a long time to talk about this because it is actually like one of my favorites. I always say it's one of my favorites, but it's not on my top 10 list, which just like I have a lot of favorites, basically. But this is definitely one of them for a lot of reasons. But before we get into the discussion, we will just read the brief synopsis written by Mitch, which goes... In this episode, Xander goes rogue with some zombies as the Scoobies fight off Audrey 2 again. Feeling underappreciated and falling victim to Cordelia's insults, Xander makes friends with a bad boy and his zombie cohorts. Rascally adventures ensue, including the zombies setting up a bomb under the school and Xander ruthlessly offing all of the zomboys. Oh yeah, Xander and Faith get freaky in the sheets, so there's that. So that's our episode description. And now, as Mitch notes in the doc, this is another Xander-centric episode. It's definitely one of my favorites. It's my favorite Xander episode so far. And I don't know what you guys think, if you want to give some brief initial reactions.
I have, like, a love-hate relationship with this episode. I loved the Xander stuff. I loved that he had his own little mini-adventure that none of them paid any attention to. But I also was so annoyed that I did not get the whole story with the Buffy monster part. I was like, this is so annoying. Like, I don't like being the Xander on the outside. And I know that's what you're supposed to feel.
That's
the
point.
Like, yeah. I totally was driven mad by it. So I have a love-hate relationship with this episode, but it was good fun. So,
right.
See, that's exactly why I like this episode, because it's kind of like, I don't really care that it's Xander-centric. I think it could have really been like any other character kind of on the outside. I mean, obviously it works that it is Xander, but I love that we don't know what's going on with Buffy and Angel and that it's this huge world-ending event. And you're kind of seeing it from the outside point of view. I think that's so different and so interesting.
I agree. What do you think, Mitch?
Well, mine's right there in the dock that I'm waiting for an Oz-centered episode. I actually do like Xander in this episode. I know, Selena, you and I usually disagree on our impressions of Xander, I guess we could say. But no, I really liked this because I thought it was fun. I mean, it kind of felt like Indiana Jonesy to me because it was basically like him going... Oh crap, and then like running away from the boulder the whole time. It was amazing. It felt like parody of that genre, and I appreciated it because it made me feel like this show was going to a really intelligent level with giving a character an episode that was going to not only create a sort of character building moment for them, but also have a bit of world building, because you could say this was filler, but I think that it's important that he loses his virginity here, and I think that Faith coming back into the foray of things could affect things. I think this is going to start to unravel the group, the Scoobies, because now this is like, you know, some kind of Pandora's box opened. Now that Xander's had sex, it's like, you know, he's not this dweeby virgin anymore as he's meant to be portrayed. And I found that development to be the most interesting.
And and you know why it's not filler? It's because I think this episode, it gives you Buffy's primary raison d'être in a way. Like, it gives it its primary setup of genre and the way it defies its own genre. Like, it's like, okay, there's big drama, there's big emotion, there's big action, and then there's big comedy. Like, you have this whole them taking a step back. It's very self-referential. It's very postmodern. You know, it's very much like they take a step back, like Supernatural has since done, and said, okay, we know this is silly. We know this is a weird, like, over-the-top premise, and we're going to give you the other side of that in this one. And what they really did, and it was actually, I think Buffy was one of the first to ever sort of very consciously switch its A and B stories around. I know that, like, Russell T. Davies, actually, he was very inspired by this, and he used it for Doctor Who to do those kinds of, like, Doctor Light episodes where you focus on other characters and you sort of use their development to further the Doctor's story. And that's, like, really what they did here, and I just think it's such a good, like, they did it so well. It's so successful, you know? And it also does a lot for the show. It also does a lot to legitimize its drama. Because they say, yeah, we do know that Buffy and Angel get like they get. And it only works if you're in the moment, in the experience with them. And I really appreciate that, actually. I think that's really fun. And I also, you know what, I also get, like, really strong Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. vibes, almost. Like, you know the early episodes, like, when you saw, like, the cleanup crew walking around, like, cleaning up after the Avengers? It's like, this is basically, like, the unsung non-hero who doesn't have powers and who doesn't get the glory, but he has this whole life going on as well, and his actions matter as well, even if no one will ever know. And I think that's important to have that as part of the show. Any comments? Sorry. No,
I was just gonna say I agree with all of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's, this is a fun way to present all of that, because it has a really, like I was saying, it's a rascally adventure. It's like that Xander and the trouble he gets up to, and it's all on his own, so it's kind of cute because, yeah, no one else cares. I mean,
right.
Even in the end when Cordelia isn't able to insult him anymore, that's a big change in Xander's character. He's no longer pining after her, and she still is, so that's going to cause some drama.
Yeah, well, actually, I was going to get to that. I just, yeah, well, we can talk about that now. I think that, actually, because I know you mentioned in the doc that Cordelia is still pining after Xander, but I really see it very differently. Like, I see it as, now that the romance of their relationship is over, all that past resentment that was there, you know, in season one and in parts of season two, really comes back, and it's, like, amplified because she has all this new resentment to add to the old resentment. So when she comes after him in this way, and when she zeroes in on him, and when she goes out of her way to push him down, I don't think it's pining. I think it's vengeance. Would you guys agree with that?
I would. I would definitely agree with that. I think she still has feelings for him. I think that's really obvious. Pining after him, probably not. I don't think she's quite that desperate, but she's hurt. And I think she revels in being a little vindictive. I mean, she always kind of felt that way toward him. That was literally the basis for the relationship in the beginning, was like hate making out. Right. And now I think, there is just more resentment added to that. And I think that it's interesting in the end that he does kind of just walk away from her, because that is probably the most mature thing we've seen Xander do.
And that was another thing I wanted to touch on as well, is that moment, I appreciated, even though I always sort of am on Cordelia's side in this, I really enjoyed that moment, because it does show that even in all of this, with everything that's happened, he has reached some kind of peace, you know, for lack of a better word, with who he is and with his shortcomings. And he realizes that he has a little bit of value. And I think one of Sander's, like, the reason he lashes out and the reason he behaves the way he behaves is because he feels so inadequate. And after this episode, like, he's like, okay, well, the rest of them still think I'm completely inadequate, but I know that I'm not, like, 100% useless. And I think that gives him that, like you said, it gives him a little bit of maturity that he hasn't had before.
Yeah, so I appreciate Xander that. Finally growing up is doing it for me. It took a long time for him to get here, and we went through many an unpleasant episode of Rewatchable and of Buffy therein, where it was just tough for me to get through and, like, to swallow Xander's actions, and that everyone would just accept them and not even think of him as being disgusting. But now that he's, like, just basically owning up to that himself, and he's... Mm-hmm. He's realizing that I need to be more responsible for my actions, and I'm going to make mistakes, and I'm going to, you know, even be badass sometimes. And that's just that. I don't have to have anyone else's approval to do that. And that's where I've wanted this character to get for a long time.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I think you're absolutely right. And it is obviously, when you're watching it for the first time, it's a very different experience to when you're watching it for the 20th time.
Oh, no.
I mean, third. I don't know how many times I've watched it, guys.
Do you watch it like the Young Gilmore Girls? Like, do you have the old recordings with the old commercials and everything?
No, I didn't. I did have the VHSs, like the individual ones. I used to buy them, like, with my allowance.
That's still pretty special. Yeah, because that's what they do on Gilmore Girls, I think, with some shows. They're like, I recorded the original version. That'd be so fun with Buffy. I can only imagine the advertisements they would have. Ah, it'd be amazing.
But no, I mean, staying a little bit on the topic of Xander here, since you brought it up, I mean, I think, as you said, like, I think this pays off what has happened so far. And I think that's why I'm sort of coming off it from a perspective when I'm not thinking, well, I have to, like, it's not so much about liking Xander as a person as it is about liking, for me, what he brings to the story. And, like, I, at this point, especially, like, I could not imagine Buffy the show without Xander. Like, I could not imagine the show doing what it's doing, telling the kinds of stories it's telling about friendship and sacrifice and growing up and making mistakes and sometimes making the wrong choices without Xander there, because he really is a failure in so many ways, and he is aware of that, and the show is aware of that. And I think the brilliance of Xander's character, which you don't get to see on a lot of other shows to this extent, because there's a lot more focus on making sure the audience, like, are 100% up to date all the time on motivations, is that, like, he brings a balance that wouldn't be there without him. And not just because he's, quote unquote, the normal guy living in a crazy world. It's because he's less, you know, it's because he's flawed. It's because he doesn't get the hero's arc or the redemption arc. Like, he's just there. And he's helping, and sometimes it's for selfish reasons, sometimes he just, like, does the wrong thing for the wrong reasons, but he's still there, he's still helping, he's still saving the world. And I think, like, I really think I need that kind of flawedness and realism from my characters, and I know that I still look for characters like Xander on TV shows, just because it tells me that the writers are telling stories with their characters. They're not telling stories and the characters are there to facilitate those stories. They're telling character journeys and the stories facilitate that. Does that make sense?
I can see where you're coming from with that, because this doesn't feel like it's just about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It feels like Xander had a purpose in this episode and a reason to do all that he did.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be the giant purpose of saving that, the Audrey 2, as you call it, you know, it doesn't have to be the big melodrama, you know, he's just there and doing the best he can, and most of the time doing a really crappy job of it. So, Kristen, you've been very quiet. What are your thoughts on this?
I've always kind of felt for Xander, because he doesn't have a specific, you know, ground out role in the group. Everybody else knows exactly what they bring to the table and knows their strength. And even Oz, like, might not have a specific helpfulness to him, but he's the werewolf, so he has a role. Like, it might not be a very helpful one, but he at least is something. And Xander has never really had a specific niche where he knew exactly where he fit. So
he didn't have a thing. like he said.
Yeah, exactly. Like I've always appreciated that about him. Like he is flawed, very much so. And you know, he's a teenager. He doesn't do the right thing. He's an idiot a lot of the time. And I like that while you've got Giles trying to make sure that Buffy is doing everything that a Slayer's supposed to do, and Willow is like the quote, you know, quintessential good girl who loves school and does everything, you know, that a parent would dream of, even though her parents are crazy. And, you know, like, you've got all of these characters that totally fit. And then you've got Xander, who kind of sticks out a little bit, but I've always liked him. So I do like that in this episode, he gets a chance to kind of have his own separate crazy adventure and all by himself figure out that he's not useless. He might not have a specific role, but he can totally, you know, like, get his hands dirty and get involved. And yeah, so I really liked him in this ep.
Right. And I think that's what you say. We'll talk about this too, I guess, in the next episode, and talk about bad girls, like how Buffy really does a lot of showing you different ways of being human and different ways of being good and different ways of being bad. And where do you draw the line, and can you draw the line? And I think Xander is one of the examples in Buffy of characters that you can't really, you can't define them. You can't say, oh, this is, you know, this is a hero character, or this is a bad character, or this is an evil character. And I think it can be frustrating, especially on first watch, to be like, but what am I supposed to think? What do they want me to think with this character? Like, what is his point? And Xander's just like, I don't have a point. I'm just kind of here, and that's okay. So very happy with this. And that, you know, everything about this just did a lot to bring that to light. If no one else has anything else to say about Xander in this one, we'll get a little bit back to him in favorite scenes and stuff. The monster of the week is also something we should spend a little time talking about. It was zombie reincarnations. Very different from the type of zombie that you would usually expect. What do you think, Mitch? What's your point in the dark?
Yeah, no, it was all right. It was interesting to see the makeup that they had for everyone. I liked that they seemed to spend a lot of time here as opposed to those weird demon zombies that were chasing after the aerobicizing Buffy in that episode where Ripper came back, almost kind of that thing. Like that, those were not my favorite kind of zombies. I remember Karen was on that episode too, and I was referencing The Walking Dead, which we're also about to get to again from another point. Mm-hmm. But I thought that these zombies looked legitimately like kind of like the American Horror Story zombies or ghosts in the first season. You know, like basically there were a lot of students that were murdered, and they like all fit into a caricature or like a certain jock or prep or group or whatever. And that's what this felt like here. It felt like the well-developed characters I could really get behind. The goofiness of coming back from death. There's a weird point here where I thought that the guy who wanted to have Cordelia as his Bride of Frankenstein, I thought that was Michael Cudlitz.
Oh, the jock guy.
I really did. Yeah, but it turns out different actors. They looked alike because they did them both up like zombie or Frankenstein monster dead guys that were like jocks, like football people. So, I didn't realize it until I heard him talk, but Michael Cudlitz is from The Walking Dead, and I saw his name in the beginning credits, and I was like, I know that actor from something. And he shows up in this role, and I was just so conflicted, because I was like, is this the same Frankenstein monster from before? I don't know what's going on. But I felt like, really, like, as a viewer, if you didn't make that connection, this episode could have been really confusing up until you got into it, because just from the onset, he's like, yeah, I'm back, again. And I'm like, okay, yeah, because you were already reincarnated once. Maybe you didn't burn in that fire. I don't know. But did anyone else find that a little bit confusing? Do you think that that was too close of a caricature to what we've already seen of a zombie character?
I never thought about that before.
No.
How about you, Karen?
I have, yeah. I do think that they look very similar, but I think they quickly get into that this is like a completely different story.
Yeah.
And that helps with them looking similar.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true. Because you're right. I mean, no, this is the... I was going to say we haven't seen this type of zombie on Buffy before, but obviously, like you guys just said, we have. We saw it in, you know...
That was,
I don't remember the name of the episode, or season two.
Yeah, it's the one where Cordelia gets stolen like 5 times.
My girl. Let's just call it my girl. So my girl.
Yeah, my girl character.
I mean, this is the type of zombie that's very much like, quote unquote, alive and very much themselves. They just happen to be dead. But what was your point here you had about a Walking Dead actor?
He plays a...
That was Michael Cudlitz.
Michael Cudlitz, that's the actor that plays both the zombie jock, and then he also plays... I don't know. Karen, help me out here. He has the same haircut.
Kristen, help me out here.
He's like, he's like a military guy.
I always want to call Michael Cudlitz's character on Walking Dead Eugene. I know it's not. No. Eugene's the black hair flat top. But it's the redheaded guy who's in the same, like, trio. And I cannot think of his name right now.
No, he was dating Rosita and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can remember his two cohorts' names. But, yeah, he plays a fairly large character in The Walking Dead right now. So it was funny seeing him younger. Because I always think of that actor as having a very large presence. And seeing him just simply younger or playing a younger role, however you look at it, it really shocked me. Because I was like... You know, you're usually so mature, like, you know, you're an intimidating force. And here he is still, because he still has that, you know, really big build. But it was just different. It was funny seeing him play, like, a high school-aged kid. I was like, this is really, really strange. It's almost like, not exactly, but imagine, like, seeing, like, for instance, I don't know, Maggie Smith playing, like, a schoolgirl. That's
like
exactly
a backup
what this did
person.
To me here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I love seeing those, like, actors that became famous on TV usually had a bunch of, like, background roles. Like, I know, like, Kate Ross,
Miller,
for example. Yeah, Wentworth Miller is another one. That's true.
Mm-hmm. It was his first role ever on the show.
Yeah. But so, Mitch has a question in the doc which says, who else really thought they were going to be making a cake? I love this question because I did. I thought that.
Right now you thought this? Like, you forgot?
So I did you, Kristen?
I was trying to figure out how they were going to make a cake from the friggin' hardware store. I was like, what is he talking about? So then I thought it was code for, like, some other ridiculous thing. But the fact that they were, like, building a bomb was the last thing I thought of. Like, the last thing. I really thought they were, like, baking a cake for a long time.
Well, there was that one guy that had, like, the bird face, I think. I can't remember how they all died. I remember there was a burnt face, there was Michael Cudlitz, and there was another one that, like, jumped off a cliff or something. I don't know. Regardless, there was, I think one of them was so convincing about it being a cake, because he was just like, come on, guys, I really want to make a cake. And it was, like, very innocent sounding. It made me feel like, sure, they're big and tough, but they probably missed food being dead for all that time, if they could even taste it at this point. But then when they did it, oh, and I remembered his name, Abraham. That's who he plays in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny too, because I remember there's a part in that when they're like, let's go make a cake, and then Michael Cudlitz is just like, let's get beer, and he's like, I swear he was about to break the speakers of my TV. He was like shouting it so loud. He has, like, whoa, that the presence of that man, holy crap, he's like full of so much energy. He made it kind of fun during this whole break-in scene, and I was scared of him getting Xander. I thought Xander was gonna get hurt from him, honestly.
Yeah your thought about cake, or you talk about cake, just reminded me what my favorite line was in this episode. It was like a different one that I picked, because I went from cake to donut to, oh yeah! So that's coming soon. What else to talk about in this episode? I mean, obviously, Xander, it is a Xander episode, and I think we sort of covered briefly, like, why this episode matters, and why him being powerless and purposeless and not having the kinds of survival skills that you would expect from a character on a show like this, like why it's important for him to be there. I've said it all, and I'm happy to repeat myself, but I won't right now today on this podcast. But I mean, I do really think that he matters, that him being who he is matters. I don't know if you guys have any other thoughts to make or points to make here.
You should make your new movement called Xander's Life Matters.
My God. But I think it's so funny, though, because it's like we keep coming back to it being about liking him being likable, or his actions being excusable. And for me, it's just completely off my radar, because I'm like that. I mean, I don't even I don't even like that. I don't even think about that because I'm not there to excuse him. I'm just there to say, look, he's a really good character to have on a show like this.
I know. I just don't know. Because I'm still so on that. I think even this episode gives him an even larger death sentence in my eyes because usually shows like this will develop a character to kill him off. I mean, sometimes immediately, if not a season later, and this is what it's starting to feel like. I feel like season four could be his death day.
But even if it is, like, even if it is like a thing that they're doing like that, I still think there's an argument to be made that a their lives still matter, you know? And we've talked about this on The 100 a lot. We should definitely not get into that right now. But I don't think a character death invalidates their life and their arc, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just here to talk about Xander.
Let's get on to the sexy bits. There's a big sexy scene.
All right,
scene.
Let's do that. Let's do that.
And I'm assuming Joss Whedon didn't make the sex sounds this time.
I don't think he did. I think it's just the angel sex.
Oh, God. I still have to go back and listen to that.
I think they did it in that, you know, the really sexy dream they had in Amends? I think that was him as well. I'm pretty sure.
No. He needs to stop that. That is not okay. Just have the actors do it. It's their job. Just like, get it over with. Oh, my God. It's even worse that he's doing it. It makes it even more awkward. Right.
Well, speaking of doing it, there's your transition. one of the things that happens to Xander in this episode is that he has sex for the first time, which, first of all, is interesting because, you know, seeing him with Cordelia, you sort of were led to assume that something like that was happening. Clearly, it was not.
Yeah.
And he had sex with Faith. It was quick. It was like, for a second there, it looked like they were setting up a ship. And then, boom, bye, I got to take a shower. And that was it. And that was her attitude to the whole thing. And Xander was sort of left in the dust, sort of very confused about what just happened. What do you guys think about this?
I think it's getting in the way of my new ship, Fuffy, and I'm not okay with that.
Of course it is. How about you, Kristen?
I think it's interesting that they made such a big deal out of Cordy and Xander's, like, physical attraction to each other and the fact that they hated each other but they just needed to make out all the time. They made such a big deal out of that that I think we all just assumed that they were sleeping together because I never thought, are they, aren't they, you know, does it matter, it doesn't matter, whatever, until now when all of a sudden he is clearly a virgin and clearly has no idea what's going on and you're like, wait, hold on, what, like, really, okay, all right. You know, so it was kind of it took me aback for a second. I didn't realize that, you know, that was still a thing his character was dealing with. And, you know, it's interesting. It was definitely, you know, poor Xander, kind of, in a way. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he doesn't feel that way now. But, you know, in the moment, you're like, that's a little cold. Thanks, Faith. Like, yeah.
Well, to be honest, like, I think it says more about Cordelia than it does about Xander. Like, it's just another little tidbit of depth that they give her, because, you know, we already know that she's not what she appears like in terms of grades and smarts, and she really wants them, like, she really wants to help out with saving the world and stuff. And now we find out that no, it wasn't as physical as we might have assumed it was, you know.
She can be such a Lydia from Teen Wolf. I love that, because I think that's
you're right, that is definitely, I think that is a direct descendant of Cordelia, actually.
Really? Yeah. I mean, Karen, did you see that when you were watching Teen Wolf at first? You were like, okay, season one Lydia, you are Cordelia.
I mean, in a way, I guess you can compare them because Lydia, of course, was very fake in the beginning. She hid how smart she was and everything. But I think the characters have evolved differently. Mm. I could definitely see the influence, though. It's honestly not something I had thought about before, but I definitely see where you're coming from.
It was like my instant connection.
Noticed that. Right. I noticed the same when I started watching Teen Wolf. I was like, oh my God, it's Cordelia. But I kind of had the same when I was watching The Vampire Diaries with what's her face? What's her name? Caroline. Yeah,
Caroline.
That's the one.
Yeah.
But we already know that The Vampire Diaries basically ripped everything off Buffy, so it's not a surprise.
I said Harry Potter, apparently, according to you. So I don't know if you're authority on what Buffy descended
I'm
into
kidding
Jerry
a little
Morselina.
Bit more about the Harry Potter thing. I'm not kidding. Like, the Vampire Diaries is fact. I'm pretty sure Julie Peck has said it, so that's not really a...
Oh, she... okay, I can get behind that. But Harry Potter... Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure J.K. Rowling wouldn't have wasted your time with the show. She has much better things to do. That's it sounds like a bit, like a roast bash. I enjoy Buffy.
I don't know about that.
I enjoy Buffy. I really do.
My conspiracy
I don't
theory.
See this as being her kind of media. I don't think she would like this.
I think she would. I think I'm going to have to dig through her interviews and see if she mentioned Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Like that.
Not,
like,
not
you
the
have
point
to be careful
of
to not mention other influences as much as you can, because then that only opens yourself up to liability, honestly, because then people could say, oh, you stole this idea, give me money.
Exactly, and I'm already saying it, so she knows. She listens, and
she's
like,
oh.
She's
like, Selena, you're my girl, you got me here.
Anyway, back to Faith and Xander. You have a point here in the doc that I think is very apt. You say, you know, she not only has a detachment from killing, but also from that word that we probably shouldn't say on the show if we want to keep it non-explicit. So what did you guys think? Like, other than what we've already talked about, anything else to note on this?
I have conflicting thoughts about this, honestly, because I know I haven't been on for a while, but I believe I was on the episode where Faith was introduced and when she started becoming a little bit more of the group. And I was like, I always kind of have an issue with Faith, but at the same time, I'm watching this right now. I'm like, oh, I really like her. And you see how broken and vulnerable she actually is. Like, she puts on a good face, but she is really damaged. And you feel bad for her because of that. But then you get to things like this, and of course the next episode, which I won't touch on right now, but she can be very cold. And I'm like, this is why I have problems with you. Like, now I'm remembering. And I think that's, you know, paralleling that with Xander. You go back and forth on so many of these characters. I think you could say that about almost everybody. I mean, at one point, like, you get angry at Willow for what she's done. And Buffy, of course, can, you know, people have a lot of opinions about Buffy. And it's so interesting, but it makes them so human and so real, because you're like, I'm really annoyed with you today, or I feel really bad for you today. And I think that even though Faith can be a hard character to swallow sometimes, it's good that she's this way, just like it's good that Xander is the way that he is.
Agreed.
And the actress, I don't have any. I'm going to butcher her names. I've heard it pronounced once, and I don't even remember it. Is it Eliza?
Eliza
Dushku.
Dushku.
Mm-hmm. Dushku. Eliza Dushku does a really good job about adding a depth to Faith. She allows me to get underneath her skin in a way that I get, because she sure seems like she's just okay, like, you know, screwing Xander and then leaving him. But in the next episode, we see when she's talking to Buffy, she is concerned with the fact that Buffy might have slept with him and wants to know how he was if he did. And I feel like that added a sort of romantic level to this whole thing that she's not going to show straight up. She can't just, according to her morals and her way of living, she can't be attached to someone. She's just going to lose them. And I love that you can see that all, not just from this episode, because she doesn't have too much reaction time here, but then you definitely can even get that from the bit when they're in bed together and they're lying and lying next to each other. And that's just, it's a sweet moment. And it reminds me a bit of the Glee Like a Virgin scene where Finn loses his virginity to Santana, because it's such a big deal for him and Santana doesn't seem to care, but you can tell she has more depth to it. And that's where I felt with Faith. And I really, really like that. I actually don't have any issues with Faith. I think she's the most realistic character on the show in terms of not fantasy, but character development and backstory.
I think I like that comparison to Finn and Santana. I hadn't thought about that before.
I was singing it the whole time that they were doing it. I was like, like a virgin, just go.
Oh my God, Glee ripped off Buffy.
Oh God, there we go. Found it.
No, your final point of the doc too kind of relates to this, which is, will Xander losing his virginity to Faith cause problems later on? What do you guys think, newbies?
I definitely think that if there is anything supposedly coming down the pike for Willow and Xander, that might be a sticking point for her. Like, they've kind of had this thing going on, and she's back with Oz, so, you know, there's nothing going on right now. But if something were to happen later on down the line, and they end up back in the same place, I could see Willow being really, like, affected by the fact that Xander gave it up to Faith. Like, I could see that being a problem.
Right. Mm-hmm. How about you?
We'll see. Yeah.
What about you, Mitch? What do you think about that?
That's a nice song, by the way. I feel like this could come in to play if Cordelia hears about it, which she will, because then she's going to feel like... sometimes with exes, I've seen this before, not in my own life, but with friends, like, they will get upset with the person that they next sleep with or date, because they'll be like, you dated down for me? How dare you? You're worth better than that. And sort of like a way of the Cordelia in this situation, holding on to that relationship in a certain way, or holding respect for that person. I think she's going to lose a lot more respect once she learns that this inevitably happened. And that's why I think it happened, so that they can be pushed even farther apart, and that maybe even ultimately, as Kristen was just saying, we could see Willow Xander. I'm not sure if I ship that. I'm not 100% on it because of the way it started. And it's just sad because he didn't give her the attention until she was in a relationship and he was too. He just doesn't want it until he can't get it. It's so stupid. I'm still not over that bit. I don't think I'm ever going to on that. I mean, I said that about Xander in general, so who knows? God. Karen, you're right. Like, you spend one day with these characters and you think you know everything about them, and then you change your mind because you see another episode.
So true. Yeah. Good thoughts all around. And we'll have to see what comes of all of this, if anything comes of it at all. Mm-hmm. And moving on to our favorite scenes of the episode. Let's see. Kristen, what did you have?
Mine wasn't a specific scene, but it was basically every time someone, like Xander, came up to someone to ask them what was going on or whatever, and they'd just look at him and be like, it's just best if you, like, stay out of it. You should just, you know, stay out of the fight. Stay out of the front lines. Like, it was just so funny that so many different characters said almost the same thing to him, like, over and over and over again. Because it's happened before. They've told him before, you should stay out of the line of fire. And he doesn't necessarily listen. So it was just, you know, I know it was kind of a piece of the episode's structure to kind of have that happen again and again, but... every time it made me giggle just a little more, especially Giles.
Mm-hmm. And Chris, Karen and I kind of have, I think, the same thing. So why don't you sort of say what was yours, and I'll give my specific example of it.
Yeah, mine was just in general, because when I think about this episode, I really think about just the fact that we're seeing Buffy and Angel's drama from the outside. To me, that is so interesting and so different from a lot of what they've done in the past. And I think it is really melodramatic when you take that step away. And I think your specific scene just proves that endlessly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like mine, I mean, it has to be the scene where we cut into Buffy and Angel just going at it, just their best, most melodramatic, like it was, but it was basically amends all over again. That's what I love about it.
Yeah, it was the cliff scene. Like, it was absolutely the cliff scene.
Exactly. And like, and it's the funny thing is that I know, like, myself and Ariana, I definitely both on the same page on this one, that it's hard for us to get into it even when it's serious, because it's a little too much of the melodrama for me. Like, I love their relationship, but those scenes for me are a little hard to swallow sometimes, but I know a lot of people, including Caitlin, obviously loves them. But then going from that, where it is very serious, and whatever you think about the tone, like the characters, obviously everything is at stake, and then you go to this, which is the same, but the show is like, yeah, okay, well, maybe it's a little much, but like the characters are totally in the moment. There's tears and Angel's crying and everything is huge music, and then it just stops and Xander is like, yeah, Andrew's like, this is a bad time. I'm interrupting like the emotional core of the show. I'm just gonna run over and do some comedy. Bye. You know, I love the self-referential tone of that, and it allows the audience to be in on the joke, so to speak, or it allows the show to be in on the joke of Buffy and Angel being melodramatic.
Exactly. I think it's so important that they recognize that it can be a little over the top. I mean, it makes sense for it to be so melodramatic because they live in this world where it is the apocalypse every other week, and the type of relationship that Buffy and Angel have is very complicated and very hard to have, and so you're going to have scenes like this.
Mm.
But I think it's important that the show is like, okay, we know it can be a little cheesy sometimes. Here's some humor so you know that we are aware of it too.
Yeah, exactly. And like I kind of said, like Supernatural does this now like all the time to the point where it got too much. But at one point in during its run, it found a really nice, I think around like season 5 or 4, it found a really nice balance too between being super over the top and then taking a step back and being like, yep, it's funny, it's weird, you know, and Buffy just, I think, is a lot more elegant about it, but it's also was an earlier time. So I give both shows, basically. I think they both do a good job. But Mitch, you're kind of semi-related to this.
Yeah, because mine's like, I think more like Karen's in general. But mine's the specific scene when everyone is being so melodramatic about their Audrey 2 fight. And ordinarily, I would have been with them. But juxtaposed with Xander's badassery and not giving a flying F made it so funny. Because he just blows off Cordelia and then he's like, anyone hungry? And everyone's like, we almost died last night. And he's like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah. Exactly, that's like another thing that I just love, you know, they're all, we didn't get to see the thing, they're all like, oh, I can't believe, it's real face, it's just, it's so good. I gotta give a bonus shout out to the scene with Xander in the basement, when he's facing down Jack,
yeah.
And he just has that, like, you see him in that moment, like, he's like, yeah, okay, my life isn't worth that much, but I'm here. I'm ready in that moment. And obviously when the bomb didn't go off, he wasn't like, he was so relieved clearly, but he found that calm. He stared death in the face and he won. And I think that's pretty cool.
He deserves the Elder Wand, doesn't he?
I guess he does.
God, J.K. Rowling.
I'm telling you. Anyway, favorite lines. Kristen, what did you have?
Mine comes from Willow, and it's at the beginning of the episode where they're, like, out and about fighting vamps, and they were the scary demon ones, I think. And Willow says, yeah, I'm fine. The shaking is a side effect of the fear.
Yeah.
She was so cute, and she's just, like, standing there, and I think it was Giles or somebody who looks up and goes, Willow, are you okay? Like, just making sure. It was just really, really sweet. Love Willow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what about you, Mitch?
I already gave mine. It was the... Oh, wait. We're talking lines now? I'm sorry. I was yelling at my cat because she was picking at something. Okay, I'll pretend that didn't happen. Okay. Mine is when Xander offers everyone a snack, and then Oz goes, no, I'm oddly full today. And it got me thinking, because I'm a Mitch, and I think about things. I'm like, how fresh could that meat have been? Does a werewolf care?
Because
he was a zombie.
Ouch.
And, I mean, he's kind of fresh from the fact that he's still bleeding, and that tricked Xander into thinking he was alive when he cut his hand open at the graveyard. But, yeah, Xander really likes that. And I mean, Oz really likes that. He was tasty.
I don't think a werewolf is that fast.
We didn't even get a chance to talk about that.
But it's gross that it's still in Oz's stomach. Like, it is gross. You're right.
Yeah, because, I mean, he ate, like, rotten zombie meat at that point. And, yeah, it's just strange. But I also think it's funny that we didn't get a chance to much talk about this, but the werewolf bit is going on, and we've seen that a couple times now. So it's a bit melodramatic to have that happen. And then when Xander is just so casual about this with Oz, I think it puts a really funny light on that as well. To be like, yeah, he's a werewolf too. That happens amongst Audrey too coming out, and there was a bomb underneath the school. Just whatever, run with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So mine sort of goes along the same line of funny, and then Karen does too. Mine was an exchange, which was the one I figured out in the middle of the discussion, which was when they are one of the other basically scenes of the melodrama going on, when Giles goes, all we know is that the fate of the entire world rests on the... Did you eat all the jellies? And Buffy goes, did you want a jelly? And Giles says, I always have a jelly. I'm always the one that says, let's have a jelly in the mix. And Willow goes, we're sorry, Buffy had three. I love everything about this exchange.
Hella, if I was the Slayer, I'd be eating more than just jelly donuts. I'd be like,
no.
Live every day like it's your last. Bring on the Boston cream pie. Here we go.
Apparently she's on a diet, as we'll talk about next episode. But
The waffles.
But yeah, no. Yeah. But I love it. I loved it. I love how important, like in the middle of them talking about the end of the world, jelly donuts are equally important.
And I think the comments and the fact that even if like you're in life or death situations every day of your life, there's going to come to a point where you're going to be like, I need to like relax. Mm-hmm. Like this is all just going to happen and I can't help it. Yeah. So let's talk about jelly donuts for a bit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And what was yours, Karen?
Well, I did really like the one that Mitch picked. That was my first choice. But then I remembered this line because it's when Bob, I believe his name was, says, oh, man, I got to catch up. Walker, Texas Ranger, you've been taping them? And then Jack goes, every app. And I'm like, man, I used to watch a lot of Walker, Texas Ranger when I was a kid. So this brought back amazing memories.
Oh, yeah. I watched quite a bit of Walker, Texas Ranger myself.
It was so good.
Good stuff, that show. Good stuff.
Awesome. And there were obviously a lot more favorite scenes and lines to choose from in this episode, but we could only pick one each, except me, who picked two. But but we have to move on to talk about Bad Girls, which was also a very exciting and interesting episode of Buffy. So the short synopsis of Bad Girls goes, in this episode, Faith kills one of the mayor's F-boys, and Buffy gives Jabba the Hutt a bubble bath. Faith is a bad influence on Buffy, but it's not like the new Watcher can do anything about it. The two break into a store, leave two cops for dead, and get a little fuffy at the Bronze. For some reason, Balthazar came back as a slimy, moist, dribbly blob. The demon uses his last words to express that he is rising soon. Meanwhile, the mayor's head gets split in half, but he's Augie Boogie now, so it's all good. What do you mean came back? I have to ask. I don't get this.
They were talking Balthazar for a while, and they were like, he's dead, he's dead, he's dead. Oh, he decided to come back. And I could have sworn we fought Balthazar at one point. I guess I should have looked that up in the Wikia, but it felt like they were saying that name.
Don't look anything up in the Wikia. Are you crazy?
Well, that's the thing. It's like I'm in the top position here, because like if I Google like Balthazar, the character, it's just... Mm. So I had to just go off of my memory, and I thought that we had... Because we've been referencing Balthazar for a while now, right?
I don't know. I don't recall. Karen?
I know that Willow said she worshipped him.
Wasn't it? No, that was Beelzebub.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
She was saying Beelzebub, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Kristen, do you remember Balthazar coming up? Is that just a common, like, demon name that they use in a lot of different shows?
Balthazar just, like, an angel name or something?
Is it? I think Balthazar may have been the name of one of the quote-unquote wise men. I don't know.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, but, no, I just assumed that... that was off of Wesley's, he's dead, he's dead, he's dead, they killed him, he's dead. Like, he said it, like, a dozen times in this episode, so I assumed he came back because they had said that he appeared once before with those creepy, or with something else, I forget, and this previous Slayer had killed him.
I thought that was just Wesley's, like, being wrong. I just assumed that was him having bad information, but...
And I meant Oogie Boogie. I didn't spell Oogie right. Sorry. It looks like Augie. I get that now.
Yeah.
Oh, Oogie Boogie. Okay, I get that.
I was running it. I read it over. I was like, that looks right. Like, Augie Boogie.
So Augie Boogie is back. And
Augie Boogie is back, guys. Watch out.
That I did not think of Jabba the Hutt for this dude. I thought of the fat vampire from Blade. Did anyone else think that?
And like, I always thought Jabba the Hutt.
They're kind of killed in the same way, too. And I was like, this is interesting.
I never thought about that one. That is interesting.
How does Jabba the Hutt die in Star Wars? I don't remember. I feel like
did it
was G with water.
Didn't he? I don't remember.
He definitely dies in the series.
Oh my god, it's so embarrassing.
I've never been a good Star Wars fan, so I can, I'm perfectly okay with
saying Leia kills him. I don't remember. Oh,
she chokes
God,
him. She chokes him.
Feminist.
Oh, yeah,
but why
yeah,
do we not remember
uses,
this?
She uses her chains to choke him. That's right.
I mean, I guess it's not similar too much because this guy gets electrocuted.
Mm. Oh, that was such a cool moment, too. I can't believe we forgot that.
Yeah,
somewhere.
I know.
See, he's much more the guy from Blade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You are right. You
Karen
are correct.
Karen wins.
Yeah, yes. You do. So, I mean, this first episode, which I don't... How much of your Fuffy... Does that mean how much... what does it mean?
Oh, they're just like an internet phrase for... I don't know. Like, let's just say you're watching Captain America, and it's like, how much of your explosions? Like, that would be a good example. It just like means there's a lot of something in a piece of media.
All right. So, Fuffy, discuss, make your appointment.
Yes.
Can
oh
we
God.
Say your ship?
Okay.
That ship name, man.
Cuffy is gone.
I don't
Fuffy
think that's
is
a
in.
Ship name.
Cuffy died a while back. It really did, and I'm sad to say that because it was my OTP originally. I think I might be Fuffy now. I really do. And it's interesting to see them dancing like that, because we can see feel like they're doing a little bit of queer baiting here. And they must have known by this point that the fandom likes them together. Why else would they have them dancing so sexily, like, on top of each other? They were just fine on themselves, and the guys came over, they're like, whatever, to these men. Like, we're having more fun on our own.
I mean, I think there's a lot more going on with their relationship. Aside from that, but I definitely, I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, Buffy and Faith, and I actually just looked it up. Fuffy is right. Like, they even used that back in the day. So, point one for Mitch, I guess, with shipper names. But but this was, I mean, and I know Natalie's touched on this too in a previous episode. Like, Buffy and Faith is one of the biggest ships on the show. And you can, when you see episodes like this, like, a lot of people probably notice other aspects of their relationship, but that doesn't mean that aspect and that interpretation isn't valid. Like, in a lot of ways, Buffy and Faith are, to use a Merlin reference, two sides of the same coin. It hurts my soul, guys. They have a lot of tension there, and there's this whole Faith sexualizing the slaying experience and the two of them doing it together. Like, the parallel is off.
Yes.
It's right there.
Like, they're holding phallic objects and stabbing things.
Yes.
Like,
yep.
And she's like, basically, I'm ready to pop after all that fighting, Xander. Let's mm-hmm. fudge. And then, so usually you started a trend now, Selena. Usually we're just all foul-mouthed, but you're classing us up a bit.
Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like, it's really there. It's not like you're reading into it. And I don't know why this is happening unless it comes to fruition. I don't know if it does. So I can speak from a completely newbie stance that I don't think it's going to. I just don't mm-hmm. feel like that is the direction the show is going to take. It doesn't make sense because it feels like the CW or the WB at that point would have fought against having a lesbian main character. And that's mm-hmm. sad. That's really sad. Because, I mean, look at how hard it was to make a certain character on the Nickelodeon show that we watched gay. That was a tough thing. And that's in 2015. And now that we're here, it's... I think this is way too far back in time to have at least a main character be gay.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good point, because we have this discussion every time there's like a same-sex like fan ship, like maybe Bucky and Steve and Captain America. That's all up in the air. Or like you have Swan Queen in Once Upon a Time. You have all those, like a huge Destiello is another good one. Like, they're huge in fandom, and they're like, that's never gonna happen. And like, I think one of the
Don't
only shows to ever do this. Well, no, yeah, I also mean that, but that has a different barrier.
That's like 12 different barriers.
The other ones. I could say this like so many times, like, one of the only shows that has ever done that and acted on it with a main character has been The 100. You know?
Yeah, that's true with Lexa.
It went there with one of its main characters that people assumed was straight, and then they introduced a female character and they were like, oh, guess she's not straight. You know, and that's like, that probably would not have happened for a show like Buffy, but when you watch it from a 2016 standpoint, you do kind of go, I wonder if they would have gone there today, and I wonder if they were trying to make it, because they've made slaying a metaphor for coming out before. So
we're
how much of it
Larry,
was intentional?
Came out to Xander and the...
that's true as well. That's
in the
true
Oz
as well,
werewolf
yeah.
episode, the one where we first learned that Oz was a werewolf and he comes out mm-hmm. as... gay in that episode. Yeah, I can see mm-hmm. that. And also, I think Team Wolf, I mean, it toys again with this, because I don't know if we're meant to believe Styles is straight or not at any given point. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's another one, yeah.
Yeah. But I know what you mean, that like it seems like The 100 definitely took that and ran with it, and I don't think anything bad of Buffy. I think that setting up Fuffy and giving it a interest, it opens this conversation, it opens the door for future shows to be able to run with it, because you have to start somewhere. with LGBT representation in shows. And I think this is fine. I don't know if it's really meant to be exactly canon. I think it's meant to be alluded to, if anything. Although I'm sure there's some fluffy shippers out there that would fight against me tooth and nail if I ever said this isn't canon. So,
Well, I think there is more to this that is worth discussing. To the juxtaposition between Faith and Buffy, and I think there's actually a dual parallel going on in this episode. You know, we have Faith representing what Buffy could be as a Slayer, and we have obviously Wesley representing what Giles could be as a Watcher. And I think, speaking in terms of what we see on screen in the show, I think what Buffy is quote unquote attracted to, and also why she goes along with Faith's wild ways in this episode, is she's attracted to Faith's full acceptance of being a Slayer. Like, Buffy, we know at this point in the show, like, Buffy is not fully comfortable with the Slayer thing. She's living in both worlds. She's juggling her humanity and her Slayer-ness. And Faith, like, even with all her insecurities and all her problems, she is fully committed to being a Slayer. She enjoys it. You know, she takes pleasure literally from it. And and I think, and we can discuss that, but I think Buffy wants that. Like, not necessarily to be like Faith, but to be a Slayer like Faith, you know?
She wants to dress in leather, expose her midriff, and get ready to pop. That's what she wants.
And I think Faith... a full Slayer and experience what Faith is experiencing. Oh,
yeah. I think even in the end of the day, that if it's not meant to be anything of a gay representation, it's meant to be of a sexual awakening in Buffy, because she's realizing what it's like to fully be a confident Slayer, not one that doesn't like it and wants to be a normal teen, but one that fully embraces it and doesn't take anyone else's BS. Because we have the thing with Faith saying, why are you paying attention to Wesley? He doesn't matter. And Buffy's like, it's part of the job. But Faith questions that, because she doesn't have a Watcher. She doesn't have anyone. She's just on her own, and she makes some questionable decisions. So I think that Buffy can both learn good and bad things from Faith, and in terms of confidence, but also in terms of, you know, being illegal, because Faith really does not give a single crap about any other human being but herself. And that's very apparent in this episode when she decides with Buffy that they're just going to leave cops for dead. Oh, I'm sure someone heard whatever. That's just, that's inhumane. That's horrible. Those people were doing their jobs and you broke into a store. I don't think that that's something we could ever, like, look good upon for Faith and say, like, oh yeah, you made the right decision there. Teach Buffy that lesson. I think we're meant to say, like, no, that's horrible.
I think one of the more attractive bits about Faith and Faith's life to Buffy is the lack of guilt. Mm-hmm. Like, you see the guilt weighing Buffy down day after day after day. Like, the vampire slaying, I don't think she has as much of a problem with. She, you know, she does it. She gets the job done. Mm-hmm. But it's the worrying about everyone else and how it's affecting her mother and how she feels about the angel situation and he is a vampire and all of that. Like, she has a lot of guilt and a lot of, like, just... she's got a lot of baggage weighing her down about all of this, and Faith has none of it. She slays vampires. She, you know, sleeps with whoever she wants. Nobody is holding her down. She does. She's free. And Buffy is so not free because of the Watcher and her mother and her friends and everything else that, yeah, she just sees how easy life is for Faith, and she wants to at least try it. She wants to see what it's like until, you know, Faith takes it too far.
But it also makes it so that, once again, Buffy's stronger, much like Spike notes when he first meets her. He's like, I've never met a Slayer that's this strong, because, you know, Joyce comes and knocks him over the head during school's out or whatever that was. And I think that's a good point that still stays true here. And I'm glad the show introduced that, because I think that is, I can't help but think of Team Wolf again. Like, you know, Scott's a more strong person for his friends and his pack. So is Buffy here. You don't mess with Buffy, because you are going to deal with the wrath of Giles, of Willow's magic, of Xander's asinine ideas. I don't know. Of Cordelia's intimidation, of Oz's werewolfness. But Faith, what's going to happen for her? Like, maybe Buffy will come after her, but she's wronged so many other people or just shown that she doesn't care about them. So it makes me wonder who else would come to her rescue if she was really in trouble now.
Such a good point. I think you both and Kristen, like, you are so right. Like, you hit it, like, spot on. And I think, honestly, I think it shows, like, this episode shows that it is Buffy's reservation, like, the fact that she doesn't let herself be free of responsibility and be free of guilt and be free of her life and her friends and her like, she, Buffy wants to live in the world. Like, Faith has that removal, like, I'm the Slayer, I can do what I want, you know, want, take, have. I don't have to play by human rules. And Buffy's like, but I want to be a part of the world, you know? And I do think that that's on like, the message here is that that's what makes her a better Slayer. That's why she's alive. That's, like, we know she's only alive because she had friends that brought her back to life, literally. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the point made in this episode, why she stopped and Faith didn't when it came to that guy.
I'm glad you brought that point up, that we almost had her die and then she came back from Xander, you know, resuscitating her. Now we have almost another situation here where another Slayer is almost created, should Faith have, you know, needed to resuscitate her after that one vampire almost drowns Buffy. And then she even makes a note of that too. She's like, I hate when they drown me. I was excited for a third Slayer. I was like, this is my Slayer production factory. Just keep killing one of them and resuscitate him, and more and more avatars will be called. I don't know. Let's work it, Kyle. Come on, guys. We got this.
I mean, do you think that would keep happening every time Buffy died?
Well, yeah. But,
if,
like,
she just kept, often... they could just keep killing her and bringing her back.
Take a turn, because I don't know how much the human body, how much stress they can take over, like, you know, medically dying and then coming back. Maybe, you know, Faith can take a turn now. Like, they can plan it, and I feel like this is something more concept that maybe even Supernatural will go with, because they would be, like, on that show probably. I haven't watched too much. Like, we have to make an army of Slayers. But in here, it feels like the show is very confident that Buffy is the lead and that Faith is the side Slayer, and that's how it's going to be. Mm-hmm. I don't really see there being another Slayer at this point. It's just, it would have been smart, maybe, for them to do that. But that's like torture. That's a big deal to kill someone and bring them back. It's not exactly like lackadaisy, it's going to work all the time either. You never know.
No, see, exactly. I'm with Selena. I think Buffy died and was brought back. I think if Buffy dies now, another Slayer's not called. Because you can't die more than once. Like, and as the Slayer, she's quote-unquote died once. Yes, she is still alive, but because she died and a new Slayer was called, I think if Buffy dies, I don't think another Slayer is called. Now, if Faith died, then I think another one would be.
Well, then what are all these Slayers in training doing? Like, they must have the super strength, I guess. Unless when you're actually, quote, called, there's some kind of, like, demigods or whatever that give you power, that give you super strength, apparently some kind of healing and wit. I don't know. It seems like all that came with being a Slayer. That's still pretty fuzzy for me. I want to see even more than when we had that Angel flashback episode. And that's when, was that Amends, actually? When he sees Buffy getting called by the previous Watcher to Giles. I want to see the actual moment. Like, I want to see, like, Buffy, like, walk into a light and glow and be like, I feel it, the power coursing through my veins. And I'm so much more intelligent now. And I can heal. I can just, this is great. You know, like, kind of like a Spider-Man Tobey Maguire moment where he wakes up one morning and is really muscular. I love
her cells. The Slayer power courses through her. We get a DNA. Let's get bit by
a radioactive spider, and then I'll be more into this.
Mm-hmm. You know what I want? And this, like, is a wild listener challenge. I want, like, a version. Like, I want something made up of all of Mitch's headcanons, because, like, since we began this, like, there's an unanswered question, and you just make up this huge elaborate thing.
They can't.
And you're like, that's the way it's gonna be. I know it. And you just go off in some time. I love it. I think it's so great. I want
save
to
yourself, please. Do not put yourself through that.
I love it though. Like, it's so funny because it's like you do ask, like, some, it's amazing questions, and then you, like, you just go with it, and I think that's great.
Yeah.
And who knows if we'll ever get answers, or if it'll be this whatever you said into a bright light or whatever. Like,
this is becoming a watchable trope, but it's probably in, quote, the comics.
I love it. Well, everything weird is in the comics.
Yeah, because they don't have to worry about the production value of it all.
Yeah. Oh my god. I do want to ask, like, continuing in the doc though, you ask a really good question, which is it okay for the Slayers to take what she wants without repercussion. And this kind of goes back to the point of, you know, Faith's worldview is, I'm the Slayer, I'm saving the world, why do I need to worry about laws? And Buffy is coming from it as this, well, we're still people, we should still obey laws. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, they're still people with records and fingerprints, and it's not like they have, like, an autonomy. It's not like they have the ability to be a vampire who can, you know, like, glamour, you know, like, in the Vampire Diaries universe, where they can just kind of compel people and do what they need and all of that. They're people, and, you know, with that comes responsibilities and, you know, consequences, so no, they shouldn't just be stealing whatever they damn well please. And I'm sure there are resources for Slayers where they wouldn't have to just steal weapons. You know, I can see breaking a chair to save another human's life to make a stake or something, but that's a different scenario than, like, I'm going to break into this store and take all of these weapons just because I can. Like, if it's a life or death situation and you need to, you know, break something to make a stake, that's different than just helping yourself to whatever you please.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. I agree with that. Do you guys think that Buffy will keep any of, after this happened at the end of the episode, will Buffy stay true to any of the bad habits that Faith taught her, or will the what happened, Faith accidentally killing a human, see the end of the quote, when she was bad phase? What do you think, Mitch?
I'd like to hope that Buffy doesn't go back to it's cool to break into stores and steal things and to leave cops for dead. I'd also like to think that she picked up some idgaff from Fluffy, or from Faith, but also from Fluffy. You know, cool, like, go out, dance at the Bronze. You're not with Angel, I guess, so don't let him tell you what to do. I know that's weird, though. I don't really know how to feel about that. And then also, when it comes to slang, just do it. Like, Buffy's all about, let's count down, let's do the thing. I think that's a better way of doing it, because you can get so nervous and worked up about it when really you just need to go in there and do your job. I don't know what more there was to think about it in that situation. It was really just jump down. And I like that Faith goes, I would have just died if you didn't come to get me, so you probably should just come save me. And I'm like, yeah, that's the way this should work, because if you're sitting around thinking, that's when the bad guys have time to, like, recover or notice that you're there or something. Just get it done. And, like the whole, like, we're going into the nest of vampires during the day, and the one guy catches on fire. I don't think that had repercussion later on. They all ran away. But I wish they actually came, if anything, I wish they came a bit more prepared to that. Like, I don't know, like a squirt gun of holy water to get them all at once. Because it seemed like they just walked in, like, expecting to slay them all, but they ran away. So that was the one part of planning they probably should have got more into. But
I
like the spontaneity of, like, those. We're taking a chemistry test. No, saving the world's more important. Let's go kill vampires. I mean, stay in school, kids, but Buffy should have left. I'm with that.
I just want to say on the squirt gun, this is very important, because I love that. And then the game, you can't play it yet because I think it's set in season 5, but the PS2 Buffy Chaos Bleeds video game, it's the best game in the world, and they have a holy water spray gun, and it's, like, the best thing ever. So anyway, just shout out to that game. I love it.
That's funny.
So, I mean, but you bring up an interesting point. It kind of goes back to what Kristen said, too, is that Faith, I mean, this episode, you're all saying, like, oh, it's better to have this, like, IGGG, babe, blah, 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 F letters.
Idgaff.
But the downside of that, and you can argue if it is that obviously Faith's spontaneity means that she doesn't stop to think before stabbing a wooden stake through a human man's heart.
What was he doing there?
Works for the mayor. Well, that's the question. We know this man works for the mayor. We don't know a lot about him. She kills him. And I want to ask you guys, like, how much of a big deal do you think this is? Like, and I know it sounds like a stupid question. It's obviously a big deal, but I mean, it goes along with Faith's philosophy. Like, I'm here to kill bad guys, you know? I got this guy. I don't care.
Isn't, like, the one rule of slaying, like, you can't kill humans? Like, I feel like we've come across this before. Mm-hmm. And whether or not he's a good guy or a bad guy, you can't, like, when she killed him and realized, you know, that he was human, like, I saw the panic in Buffy's eyes, like, she broke the cardinal rule kind of thing. And yeah. Faith is just like, you know, he's a bad guy, I killed him, it's what I do. And I'm like, if, you know, if the Slayer is righteous in her, you know, task and her mission, then there has to be a line. And the line is you can't kill humans. And so, yeah, I think it's a huge deal that she killed a human, even if he is a quote-unquote bad guy.
Mm. Well, I was more asking, like, not that that's not also important, but I was more asking, like, for you guys, if this was real, if the Slayer was walking around saving the world all the time, like, would you think this was, you know, kind of like robbing stores and stuff, like, you know, one casualty?
That seemed, like, extensive. It didn't make sense to, I mean, to rob the store. I mean, they have Giles' library full of weapons.
That's true. Sure.
That was just stupid. Like, there's no purpose to doing that. In terms of killing the guy, I need a bigger picture here. I don't know who he is. I don't know what he does for the mayor. I don't know why he was there. I don't know his intentions. So I don't know if she was justified in killing him or not, because I think there are going to be instances in the future of Buffy the Vampire Slayer that we will have moments where we're going to say, Buffy, kill that human. And she may be conflicted about it, but it's something that's going to need to happen. And I guess we kind of killed a human already, didn't we? With, like, the Gwendolyn Watcher, the one that turned into, like, Electric Lady. She wasn't a demon. Originally, she was a human.
She killed herself by playing with power that was not hers to play with. Like, she kind of doomed herself by, you know, she was no longer human. She had superhuman strength. She had superhuman abilities. So
no one killed her.
I mean, like, basically we're saying that Xander got lucky that those guys were zombies, because they would have still chased after him if they were humans. Then being zombies had nothing to do with the fact that they were still after him. So it's like there's a weird fine line that Buffy walks, that as soon as something supernatural is introduced, it's okay to kill them. But if this person is seen as purely human and they don't have magic powers, we're cool.
Right, and that's kind of why I ask, because that's something I've thought about as well. Like, it seems the only line drawn is, are they human or are they not? You know, and I think it's an interesting that they draw that line, because it's not, obviously the show has already proven that that's not where you draw the line between good and evil, or threat to humanity or not. So I just think it was an interesting sort of thing to ponder a little bit. You also ask here, will this man's death be important to the mayor? It's another good question.
If I knew who he was, maybe, but he just been, like, this stuttering guy in his office.
He's not important to you.
Is he, like, security? Yeah. Is that what we kind of got in this episode?
He was a secretary, I think.
He was a secretary, because it was weird. He would just come in and get yelled at by the mayor and then leave.
I want to talk a little bit about the new watcher named Wesley, who ain't got nothing on Giles' super mega foxy awesome hot fencing skills. Karen, what are your sort of first impressions of the new watcher?
I mean, I think he has good intentions. He is trying very hard, but I think that's also his problem. He's a little arrogant, and just seeing him compared to Giles, and I mean, it's funny because Giles can be really bumbling too. Like, he's not exactly the most put together guy. Sometimes he gets flustered, but seeing Wesley next to him is just ridiculous. And I think that it's so funny that all of a sudden Giles looks like this really cool guy with his, like, sleeves rolled up, and he's just sitting there sassing him.
Back. Yeah.
Yeah, thank God. And he's just sitting there sassing him, and it's like, I love this side of Giles, but it's also interesting to see him up against, you know, kind of like his own kind.
Yeah, yeah. His character development is basically all in his forearms, is what we're saying on the show. I love it.
I love that Giles, like, looks at Wesley as, like, the stuffy version of him. Like, you know, Giles thinks he's cool, like, himself.
He's cool. Yeah, so, like, he is. He's Ripper.
When Wesley comes in and is, like, you know, spouting rules out of books, you know, every 30 seconds, like, Giles is like, he's the uptight version of me. Like, I'm cool. This guy's not.
But at the same time, they still had that moment when they were, like, taking off their glasses and cleaning them at the same time. Uh-huh. There's clearly a... And that's what I love about Giles, too, is that he's not just one thing. Like, he... Like, Wesley is definitely, like, what Giles used to be in season one, but then we learned that Giles has had a past, and then I think he's worked... Because we learned about that whole trauma he had with a demon and someone died, and he's tried very hard to repress that. He basically became... Like, he grew out of his rebellious phase and became his father, and bought into all the Watcher stuff, and the more time he spends in Sunnydale with his kids, the more he's, like, kind of reverting you know, to what he would have been if he'd kept on the old path and stuff. And the more he's loosening up and the more savvy, he's like Buffy. Basically, he's like Buffy. And Kendra and Wesley are like the other side of that, that have learned that it's not by following the rules that you succeed. And then Faith is like the other extreme of that. And I love it. And I think that's what I love most about this, like seeing this character Wesley introduced, is what it does to show us how far Giles have come. And I'm sure that's a large part of the reason why he's here. And we sort of have a question in the doc, which asks, well, how much longer is he actually going to stick around? Is he going to die? Is he going to quit? Like, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, he has to die, right? They have to see that Giles is the more successful watcher, and they need to keep him mm-hmm. because the other guy couldn't even survive in this world.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Kristen? as stuffy and uptight as Wesley was, I kind of liked him. So, I don't necessarily want him to die. I would love it if him and Faith, like, maybe hit it off somehow as, like, a watcher-slayer kind of relationship, and maybe he can rein her in a little bit. I don't know. It would be nice to see him stick around, but, you know, Giles and Buffy are a team, and I don't like him trying to intrude on the team.
Oh, yeah. It's annoying. I agree with you completely. Like, I think he's really funny, and I really enjoy, like, that he brings that aspect of, he's like season one Giles. He brings that to the show, and he shows how, like, that scene when they were with Balthazar, and Wesley was basically mm-hmm. like, I like my kneecaps. And Giles was like, oh my God, just let him go. Like, whatever. Like, I love that.
He's going to torture and kill us anyways. Get over it.
Yeah. But I do. I mean, I do agree. It's frustrating to see him come in and be basically like, because also the things he said to Giles, you know, about him, like, you shouldn't be here. Like, you were just here to talk about overdue books. Like, I just get angry because I'm like, how dare you speak to Giles that way?
You don't know anything.
Yeah. So, I mean, moving on a little bit more, I mean, just to talk a little bit about Balthazar, or Jabazar, as you call him, like, I don't think we can avoid just talking about, like, how, first of all, so gross. Like, the grossest thing, like, you've ever seen in your life.
Were they squishing watermelon or something this whole episode? Like, for the sound effects, it was gross.
The sound was what made it gross. Like, I really, oh my God. And, like, they kept having to moisten him or he was going to crack. Like, oh my gosh.
The poor person that has to sit there and moisten him all day.
There's a really funny blooper.
They were like, this is my job, this is what I do, I moisten Jabazar, cool.
There's a, not to take you guys out of this, because I hate doing that, but, like, there's a really funny blooper of that moment. Like, there are not a lot of Buffy bloopers, but there's, like, someone cut together a compilation of all seven seasons, so don't look it up. But where he's sitting there, and he's going, like, rah, 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 rah. And then, like, the thing, because it's obviously, like, obviously a guy in a fan, so, like, duh. And the thing opens, and his legs, like, tiny little legs, are just, like, you know, flopping around.
Oh, that'd be really cute.
It is so funny.
Maybe you can cut that out, like, just that little part.
Yeah, I'll try.
And then upload it to Twitter and tweet it rewatchable so we can all see it as newbies. Because I'm really curious to see what it's like underneath that giant fat suit thing.
Right. But Balthazar dies, and thank God that wasn't going to be a long time villain. And he leaves them with the warning that says, you know, he's going to rise. What do you guys think that's all about?
I don't know. I feel like that's a common threat in Buffy.
Belzebub. There you go.
We'll deal with it eventually. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't know. We dealt with the Master pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I figure it has something to do with the stupid mayor guy. Yeah. Mm. Something. It has to have something to do with all of that. In other words, what's the point?
Right. Well, there was definitely something that happened with the mayor this episode, was that he, by the way, also another one of my favorite visuals from the series is his list to do PTA meeting. Become invincible.
Become invincible. Attend PTA meeting. I saw that too.
Get a haircut.
Yeah. Yes.
Can you get your haircut if you're invincible? Question.
I don't know. That's a good question. He should have done that before. Bad planning. But yeah, so he basically, he wanted to become invincible, and that's one of the things that happened in this episode, and he basically did.
Superman
demon.
Invincible? No, he's not. He's, like, squishy.
No, he's like, weird. Like, his insides are, like, that black thing. So like when they cut him, he like just came back together basically.
Did it look like he was made of bugs, like Oogie Boogie from Nightmare Before Christmas?
Yeah.
I saw like the glowing worms inside lady of him. Too.
Mm. That's gross. That's like that episode with the bugs of Buffy.
Ugh, oh, there was so our also, Oogie Boogie. Oh. This is the second time Oogie Boogie's been in the show. That's true.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I mean, what do you guys think that's all gonna lead to? You ask if you think he's meant to be seen as purely evil at this point.
I guess.
Yes.
I have no clue because the mayor and his little F boy that got killed don't matter to me because they don't tell me why they're doing what they're doing. I'm hoping that pays off sometime. I'm assuming it's going to. Buffy's done this before. They've kind of had like, I don't know. No, they were more up front with the master. They just told you that Voldemort's evil and Harry has to go kill him because he's the chosen one. That was that. But now here, it's like, what's going on with Oogie Boogie Mayor? Why does he want to be invincible? Mm-hmm. What's his ultimate goal? Does he want to feed more babies to a giant Slytherin snake? I don't know.
Right. Yeah, it's good questions. I like it. I like that the mayor's being set up as, like, you know, like he's a happy kind of cares about health. I know you guys had talked about that a few weeks ago, but, like, how he had that hygiene thing. I think that's great. I really enjoy this character.
Well, this is maybe his reaction to his little F-boy, his secretary. Maybe that this is a reaction to that. Like, you know, I need to be invincible now. Here's this magic spell, and we're good. Because now that guy's died, I don't even need... I mean, I still think he was security. I don't know, he was just secretary. I feel like that was maybe what was going on with that whole bit. It's just strange. Maybe he'll be like,
I have to kill you. He didn't know that he was dead at that point.
No, I don't think so, no.
He didn't know that he was dead at that point.
So he hasn't discovered it is what we're meant to understand there.
Because he was like, where's Adam or whatever his name was? He usually doesn't miss these things.
Right.
Like, he didn't know why he wasn't there.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah, the mayor is probably the he that Balthazar was talking about. I mean, what else would it be? Because they're not setting up anything else. Is it Mr. Trick? I don't know. Is it Spike and Drusilla? I don't know.
It's Beelzebub. That's it. That's how it's all going to come together.
Yeah.
So, moving on to our favorite scenes. Now, I just saw you change yours, Kristen. I want to start with that because we didn't really get to discuss it in the episodes. I'm glad you put it in your favorite scenes.
Yes, because my favorite quote actually comes from this scene, too. No, my favorite scene is by far Giles and Wesley with Balthazar, like, in the same room, and all of the quips that came about with all of that, and just Giles kind of being the funny to Wesley's straight guy in this, yeah. You know, usually Giles has the straight lines and Buffy gets the laughs or Xander gets the laughs, whereas here Giles gets the laughs and it just made me so happy. So yeah, no, that whole scene was ridiculous and hilarious and kind of gross because Balthazar was in it.
Absolutely. I love that too. And what about you, Karen?
Mine was actually, I did change mine too, because I really liked when the mayor checks off his to-do list. I think that is so freaking hilarious. I love these evil guys who are like really charismatic and just, they're so crazy. But I changed it to the newspaper scene actually, because Buffy gets the newspaper in the morning and goes to check it. And it's such a quiet scene, and she doesn't say anything about it, but you know exactly what she's doing. She flips through every page of the newspaper to see if anyone has reported the guy's death yet, to see, you know, what other repercussions have come out of their night of doing bad things. And I think I would argue, to kind of go back to what we were talking about at the top of the episode, that Buffy doesn't want to be like Faith. I think Buffy finds that lifestyle attractive because everybody kind of wants to be a rebel and wants to be a lawbreaker and not have to worry about anything. That would be a great life, you know, to just not have that stress. But Buffy can't do that. She just, it's not inside of her to be that way. And I think the newspaper scene, and it really shows that side of Buffy that she just can't turn it off. Even if she wants to, she can't. And it makes her such a good person.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's kind of like what we were saying, what Kristen was saying too. And like what, when like, I think that's what I mean by like, she doesn't want to be like Faith. She wants to be a Slayer like Faith. Like she wishes she could be that careless, but she cannot, like, it's not in her character. So I agree. I'm glad you picked that. That's a good one. I wanted to ask you guys too, just really quickly, like, when Faith says at the end, like, I don't care, do you guys think she doesn't care?
No. And I confirmed this by looking at the transcript from Buffy World, because they wrote that Faith reaches her hand toward the wound, has a guilty look on her face, then takes it away quickly and looks shocked that she did it.
Right. You see her washing her blood off her hands. Like, I think the writers intended that to be like a Lady Macbeth parallel.
Yeah, and, thank you. I was going to say that. There are so many Shakespearean references in Buffy, and it's weird that you don't notice them until you do, and then it's like, oh my God.
Right.
I guess that Shakespeare is like in every form of media in somewhat of fashion, but I feel
such
like
a Shakespeare ripoff. Oh my God.
So that means J.K. Rowling in turn must have copied Shakespeare.
Oh my God. We well, Hermione, it's right there. Anyway.
Stop.
Well, Mitch, carry on. What was your favorite scene?
Oh, okay. So more specifically, not just Fuffy at the Bronze, but also when Angel gets jealous of, quote, the friends Buffy's making. I don't really know that he references a certain gender, so he could have been referencing the fact that he's getting jealous of Faith and Buffy.
I bet that's what it was.
Me too.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm Mitch. I'm watchable. I have to have a ship. That's the way this goes.
Right. Of course. You know that dance scene, I think, is one of the most iconic pieces of imagery in Buffy history. Like,
really?
Wouldn't you agree with that, Karen? Like, that's, like, when you think Buffy, like, that's one of the first images that springs to mind, is then dancing at the Bronze like that.
Not with Faith, actually. I always think of the first one more. Like, that always stuck in my head a lot more.
The Xander one?
Yeah, oh, right, bad. Right.
That one. In the credits, the one that I find really sexy, and she's looking...
Yes.
That's when she was bad, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. That's kind of like a reflection again, because once again, when Buffy goes bad, she dances really sexily. I'm liking this. That's a good trend.
It is a recurring trend. So mine basically was the scene when Wesley is first introduced, is my favorite scene of this episode. And when they go, we have it twice. We have first, you know, Buffy comes in and she goes, new watcher. And Jazz is like, yeah, new watcher. And then when Faith comes in, she's like, new watcher. And they're both like, new watcher. And it's funny because they've been through this before. And they're all like, is he evil? Are you evil? And then he just keeps saying stupid things. And Buffy's like, are you evil? You know, please be evil. I love it. I think it was great. And our favorite lines. Karen, you had one from the scene I just talked about.
Yes, I did. It's just Buffy being Buffy, basically. But she tells Wesley, whenever Giles sends me on a mission, he always says, please. And afterwards, I get a cookie. And it's the way that she says it. And it's just the way that these two are kind of teaming up against him. I mean, Giles, I think, a little more subtle than Buffy, at least in the beginning. But it's really great. And it's just typical Buffy humor.
Yeah, it is. And this is right after Helpless, too. Like, let's not forget. Like, this is our answer to whether Buffy is going to hold it against Giles. Clearly, she does not. So it's a nice.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't even think of that. Mm. Wow. I wonder if she saw him rescuing her from the vampires. Didn't he, like, come to her rescue at one point?
He did.
So I think that might have, like, done it over for her, like... You know, he still cares for me. He had to do this because this is his job. He didn't like it, so he stopped it. He's not a normal watcher, and he got fired for this. I think she saw the sacrifice he made for her, and that was what made her trust him again.
Agreed. And Wesley probably helped with that, too, because, like, you imagine, like, a child of divorce being super angry at their dad, but then the mother gets a new boyfriend, and suddenly, like, you're 100% of the dad's team, right? Because that's your dad. I think it's kind of the same thing.
Buffy likes her original mommy better than her new mommy.
Exactly. I just realized we all have Wesley and Giles related stuff. So, Mitch, what was yours?
Mine's when Wesley's reading the journal entries that Giles wrote when he first got to know Buffy. And he said, here's your first entry. Slayer is willful and insolent. That would be our girl, wouldn't it? Cute.
That's what makes her strong.
And shows character development, because now, sure, I'm sure Giles thinks that, but They have like a you can't end that relationship. Giles and Buffy, that's pretty solid.
It is. And mine was actually, I think, from pretty much the same exchange, so I'll just say that now too, which is when Buffy basically doesn't recognize Wesley's authority, and Giles obviously doesn't either. And then when Buffy leaves, Wesley to Giles goes, "You're not helping." And Giles goes, "I know. I feel just sick about it."
So dry.
That line just tells you everything you need to know about Giles. Like, he's not. He's done with the council. He's done with everything to do with it. And I love it. And Kristen closes out with another great Giles and Wesley exchange.
Sure. It's from Wesley and Giles with Balthazar in the little creepy hot tub room, and Balthazar says, "You know what I want," and Giles says, "If it's for me to scrub those hard to reach areas, I'd like to request you kill me now."
I couldn't help but think of Papa wanting to have his toes scrubbed.
It also just says so much too, like how much what has happened to Giles over the course of the show has affected him. Like, this would not be what he would have been like before losing Jenny and being tortured by Angelus.
Yeah, like, he's a lot more snarky, and like he trades wits now a lot more than he ever did before. Like, you know, he was very reserved before. He was Giles the Watcher, and now he's Giles, and he's Giles. Also the Watcher.
Hashtag Giles, that's what he is.
I really want to know how Brittany's feeling about this episode, because I feel like this brought out a certain side of Ripper that we haven't seen. Exactly, because he's like snarkier than he's ever been to everyone. I'm sure she's over there swooning about the forearms as well.
Aren't we all, though? Like, let's be real.
Yeah, he goes at a fence well. That's not an easy thing to do. He just goes at it. It's so cool.
Yeah. Anyway, so contact, moving on now to listener feedback to round off the show. If you want to get in contact with us to talk about these episodes or any upcoming episodes, as long as they're spoiler free, don't be all like, "Oh my God, I'm so excited for episode whatever," because I don't appreciate that for Gilmore Girls. So I'm sure that these guys don't appreciate it for Buffy.
Well, I don't mind so, as much. I find it to be kind of fun, because then I'm like, "Oh, good, so I'm not going to have another The Puppet episode. This is going to be cool."
See, I'm the opposite. I don't like it because then I expect it to be great, and I'm worried if I don't love it. So it's it puts more pressure on me.
Yeah. And if you're like, "Oh, I love this character," and you're like, "What? Why?" And it's come on.
Wait, what?
Sorry. Well, it's funny because someone did say something akin to that in our listener feedback. So look, that's your lead.
I really, like, guys, come on.
No, it's cool. No, this one's cool. This is a good balance. Okay. I think we're going to like it. Let's get to it. Let's get through this part.
All right. Well, before we do that, just reminding everyone how you can get in contact with us to leave your, you know, I'm such a like comment police. It's really bad that I'm the one doing all this. But so you can do that by emailing rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet @re_watchable. You can find this post on hypeful.com, and you can go to rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And iTunes reviews, if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will bake you a cake solely using ingredients found at the hardware store.
It might not be a bomb, but it would definitely be poisonous.
Is this going to be better or worse than the cupcakes you made for homecoming?
She can build you a cake. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
All right, so listener feedback. We have 3 comments, so that's just one for each of you. So, Mitch, if you take that first one.
Yes, so this is the comment I was talking about. So Sarah McCabe, I think I pronounced your name correctly, @SarahR McCabe, wrote, "Can't wait for Bad Girls, which introduces my all-time favorite Buffyverse character. Excited to hear what you guys think." Now, Selena, she's vague enough here that I don't know if she's talking about Jabazar, or Wesley, or one of the random witches they killed, or maybe the cops. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's probably Wesley, so that gives me the inclination that maybe he sticks around longer, but I still don't know. Like, I still don't know.
Yeah.
That's the kind of listener feedback I love. That's what I'm talking about. That's what...
I mean, Balthazar is definitely a completely viable option for this one, so I totally agree.
Yeah, Balthazar, I know. You can't let that one go.
No. And the next comment from Kimberly. Kristen, if you want to take that one.
Sure. Kimberly Hainer @KimberPower says, "That recap for Helpless, too good, Ariana. Too good."
Yes.
I mean, I'm not like a huge, crazy Hamilton fan, but it's still still great. I read through it earlier and I was like, this is genius.
I just still cringe about having to do that because like that was like it was so good and I just could not do it the way it should have been done.
It was intimidating. You did a good job.
Thanks so much. And Karen, what's about that last one?
This one is from Laura Morrow, who says, Helpless and Gingerbread both were so good. I rewatched both of these so often and loved both Willow and Buffy in them so much. I actually have a lot of issues with Gingerbread.
Same. We talked about that too, yeah. We didn't.
Yeah, it's. I think it's just all the Joyce, and you kind of forgive her in the end because you realize that it's not necessarily her doing this, but it makes me crazy, and it's just one of those episodes that really stresses me out. But
it's still in her wheelhouse. If she's able to get to that point from evil means, that means that she started there. She could get there on her own.
Yeah, I guess, but I think you find her more sympathetic than you would, you know, otherwise. But I do really love Helpless. Also a hard episode to watch, I think, but for a different reason, just with Giles and everything. But, yeah.
Agreed. And thank you guys for those comments. And please, we can't wait to hear from you. Now, until next week, we don't know who's going to be on next, but we'll let you guys know, or you'll just have to wait and find out. I believe we're talking about Doppelgangland and what else is there? I don't know. I don't remember. I just have to look it up. That's the only one I remember. It's Consequences in Doppelgangland. That's the pair that the hosts will be discussing next week.
So Consequences until... for Xander losing his virginity, for Faith having stabbed the man, and Doppelgangers in terms of there's a new Buffy in town.
Yep. That's exactly what's going to happen.
As a newbie.
Good. I want you to do this every week. Oh my god, please do that every week. Just listen to the episode titles and say what it's going to be about.
Well, I said that with Gingerbread, and I expected there to be like little Krampus versions of gingerbread men that are like evil and they kind of get.
Oh,
they're
so
18.
Good. Like Shrek. Yeah,
yeah,
so
like
good.
The Shrek anyway. Guy. Like, not my gumdrop buttons, but I was.
It's Mitch's musings to end every episode.
Yes, we even have a name for it now. That's amazing. I'm going to be expecting that. I'm going to be listening for that. So you better keep that up.
Oh, I do.
Okay.
Time. Yeah.
There's a good note to leave everyone with, and I can go get some dinner. And until next week.
Don't eat gingerbread for dinner. It's not going to be good.
Yes. No. All right. Until next week, my name is Selena.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Mitch.
Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Grr. Grr.
Grr. Grr.